Do an internet search and ask, what is the origin of life on Earth? And you'll find articles and videos pointing to some kind of evolutionary explanation. One honest NASA scientist in a video on the subject begins and ends with, "We just don't know." Yet he's clearly looking for a materialistic or evolutionary explanation. Consider that there are only three fundamental hypotheses for life existing on planet Earth. Number one, life was transported to Earth, something called panspermia. Number two, all life evolved from non-living matter. And number three, an intelligent being, in other words, God, created life. Which is correct? Can you know? While there's much about life that we do not know, the answer of how life began can be known. And on this Tomorrow's World program, I'll be answering that question. And I'll also be offering you a free resource that explains how both evolutionists and many professing Christians are in error. So be sure to have writing material available to take down our contact information. And I'll be back in 5 seconds, so don't go away. Warm greetings to all of you from all of us here at Tomorrow's World, where today I'm asking and answering the question, how did life begin on planet Earth? And later in the program, I'll address an additional question. If God is the cause of life, how could He do it? First, let's notice the three fundamental hypotheses for the origin of life on planet Earth. Number one, life was transported to Earth from someplace else called panspermia. Number two, all life evolved from non-living matter. And three, an intelligent being that we would call God created life. Setting aside the huge problems of even bacterial life traveling through vast distances of space, over immense times, and in an environment that is hostile to life, the idea that life was transported to Earth from somewhere else in the universe merely postpones a central question. If life was transported to planet Earth by a meteor or some other unknown means, how did it begin at that original source? Was it by chance, or was it by an infinitely great mind with unlimited power? Since a time when Charles Darwin's thesis on the origin of species was published more than 165 years ago, the need for God in people's minds has been diminished. After all, if we're no more than the product of blind evolutionary chance, what need is there for a divine creator? However, in the last half century, insurmountable cracks have appeared in Darwin's thesis. Let's notice three of them. Crack number one, the fossil record argues against evolution. Now, this may surprise you, since evolutionists often point to the fossil record as proof. However, they personally know better. The lack of fossil evidence was a problem from the beginning, and Darwin admitted this. But it was hoped that with the greater fossil finds, the intermediates, the so-called missing links, would be found. But sadly for evolutionists, that has not happened. Every few years we hear of the missing link has been found. But is that true? The answer is no, it is not. Part of the problem is that it is not a single link, but tens of thousands of links that are required, not only for man, but for every living creature. Scientist Michael Denton pulls back the curtain on the geologic record in his insightful book, Evolution, A Theory in Crisis. The overall picture of life on Earth today is so discontinuous, the gaps between the different types so obvious, that as Stephen Stanley reminds us in his recent book, Macroevolution, if our knowledge of biology was restricted to those species presently existing on Earth, quote, we might wonder whether the doctrine of evolution would qualify as anything more than an outrageous hypothesis. And as Denton points out, an evolutionary scientist must admit, missing transitions, that is, intermediate forms, plagued Darwin from the beginning. The absence of intermediates, although damaging, was not fatal in 1860. For it was reasonable to hope that many would eventually be found as geological activities increased. However, time and new discoveries have not been allies of evolution. Denton suggests that probably 99.9% of our current knowledge of the fossil record has been discovered since 1860, and only a small fraction of the 100,000 or so fossil species known today were known to Darwin. But virtually all the new fossil species discovered since Darwin's time have either been closely related to known forms or, like the Poganophorus, strange, unique types of unknown affinity. Transitional forms simply are not there. And Denton states the obvious to any honest person who looks at the fossil record with an open mind. Without intermediates or transitional forms to bridge the enormous gaps which separate existing species and groups of organisms, the concept of evolution could never be taken seriously as a scientific hypothesis. So crack number one in the evolutionary hypothesis is the fossil record argues against evolution. Crack number two, it is mathematically impossible for life to rise from dead matter by chance. Science writer and evolutionist Bill Bryson explains, "No one really knows, but there may be as many as 1 million different types of protein in the human body. And each one is a little miracle." Now, one of those 1 million or so miracles that you have likely heard of is collagen. And regarding the odds of it self-assembling, Bryson states what all rational scientists must admit. The chances of a 1,055 sequence molecule like collagen spontaneously self-assembling are, get this, frankly, nil. It just isn't going to happen. He then went on to describe the mathematical odds against a much smaller 200-string protein self-assembling as greater than all the atoms in the universe. The larger collagen protein happening by chance is of a magnitude incomprehensibly greater. But collagen is not even close to the largest protein. Titin gives elasticity to our muscles and much more. And it contains somewhere in the neighborhood of more than 33,000 amino acids. Now that's like throwing letters of the alphabet together and by accident form a coherent sentence made up of some 33,000 or more letters. Think about that. No wonder evolutionist Bill Bryson makes this remarkable admission. By all the laws of probability, proteins shouldn't exist. Nature programs and books generally portray evolution as a fact rather than theory. However, this theory is in crisis, as Michael Denton explains in Evolution, a Theory in Crisis. So far, I've given you two cracks in the theory. Crack number one, the fossil record argues against evolution. And crack number two, it is mathematically impossible for life to rise from dead matter by chance. I want to share with you a third crack, really another giant chasm. But before I do, I want to tell you about today's free resource, Evolution and Creation, What Both Sides Miss. You may think, I believe in God, so why do I need this resource? You need it for two reasons. If you believe in God, you'll be given evidence of His existence that you likely have not seen. Evolution and Creation, What Both Sides Miss, will bolster your faith. But there's another reason. What many professing Christians think the Bible says about the creation is an error. Tomorrow's World writer, Wallace Smith, clearly shows how sincere Bible believers may be missing the mark. So pick up the phone or go to our website at twtv.org/evolution to order your absolutely free copy of Evolution and Creation, What Both Sides Miss. And when I return after this short break, I'll reveal another crack in the theory of evolution. Evolution is considered a proven fact in the minds of many, so much so that few biology teachers, scientists, and journalists who want to retain their jobs are willing to openly profess believing otherwise. But has it been proven? Life is either the result of a cosmic accident or it is the result of a great intelligence with unlimited power. There's really no other choice. In the previous portion of this program, I gave you two cracks in the theory of evolution. Now here's a third crack, actually a gigantic chasm that makes the Grand Canyon look small. And that comparison is ridiculously conservative. Crack number three, life is complex beyond our comprehension. When Charles Darwin formulated his theory and published it in 1859, he had no concept about the complexity of life. A cell was seen as little more than a membrane holding a gelatin-like substance with nondescript blobs moving about aimlessly inside. But with the advent of modern technologies that allow us to see inside the cell, we now know that the complexity of cells staggers the mind. As Michael Denton explains, between a living cell and the most highly ordered non-biological system, such as a crystal or a snowflake, there's a chasm as vast and absolute as it is possible to conceive. Although the tiniest bacterial cells are incredibly small, each is, in effect, a veritable micro-miniaturized factory containing thousands of exquisitely designed pieces of intricate molecular machinery, far more complicated than any machine built by man, and absolutely without parallel in the non-living world. Denton goes on to explain, "The complexity of the simplest known type of cell is so great that it is impossible to accept that such an object could have been thrown together suddenly by some kind of freakish, vastly improbable event. Such an occurrence would be indistinguishable from a miracle." In his 2019 book on the subject of the human body, Bill Bryson makes this thought-provoking admission. "You could call together all the brainiest people who are alive now or have ever lived and endow them with the complete sum of human knowledge, and they could not between them make a single living cell, never mind a replicant Benedict Cumberbatch," a British actor, that is. Yet evolutionists want us to believe that something so complex happened by chance. The truth is that scientists cannot give a rational explanation how such a grand accident could occur. They give just those stories that sound good on the surface. For example, this might have happened, then this may have come about, and it's not hard to imagine this change taking place, etc., etc., and etc. All this leads us to the obvious conclusion. What is the most reasonable explanation for life? Many scientists and philosophers are coming to the realization that evolution is found wanting, and that the only rational explanation is that there is an intelligent creator behind life. Perhaps the most striking example is that of the late Anthony Flew, considered by many at the time to be the world's most influential philosophical atheist. But early in 2004, at the age of 81, he changed his mind. Flew announced his conversion to deism, launching seismic waves throughout the philosophic community. He had become convinced that life would not be possible without the extreme fine-tuning of the universe, and this was only possible with a designer. In addition, he concluded that new discoveries about DNA made it impossible that life could be an accident. As he put it, "It now seems to me that the findings of more than 50 years of DNA research have provided materials for a new and enormously powerful argument to design." When we consider how complex life truly is on every level, it brings us to another question. How could God do it? It should be obvious to anyone who knows even a little about the structure and operation of cells that they cannot happen by chance. As Michael Denton rightfully stated, "The complexity of the simplest known type of cell is so great that it is impossible to accept that such an object could have been thrown together suddenly by some kind of freakish, vastly improbable event. Such an occurrence would be indistinguishable from a miracle." Yes, we're left breathless regarding life's complexity, So much so that we again must ask, how could even God do it? I'll answer that question in the next portion of this program, but I want to remind you of today's offer, Evolution and Creation, What Both Sides Miss. Just call our toll-free number or go to our website to get your free copy of Evolution and Creation, What Both Sides Miss. And when I come back, I'll discuss how God may have created life on Earth. A 1961 hit song tells us that God made a woman out of 100 pounds of clay, an obvious reference to the biblical account of man being made of the dust of the ground. But much is left out of this picture. My guess is that many people envision God taking clay and molding it in the form of a man, then breathing into his clay nostrils, and the clay suddenly becomes a living man. But was it that simple? Or was it magic? How did the circulatory system, the digestive system, the respiratory system come to be? How were all the organs, the heart, the liver, spleen, and pancreas formed? And let us not forget our brain. As Bryson says, the most extraordinary thing in the universe is inside your head. You could travel through every inch of outer space and very possibly nowhere find anything as marvelous and complex and high functioning as the 3 pounds of spongy mass between your ears. How did something so marvelous and complex as the brain come to be? How did the cells that make up the organs and systems, with all their amazing organelles and protein machines, suddenly appear? The human body and all living creatures, whether great or small, are designed from the microscopic to cause the body to function as a whole. As explained in the previous portion of this program, the complexity of life is so great that scientists readily admit it is mathematically impossible to happen by chance. Yet they refuse to entertain any alternative to their materialistic religion. But if there is no other alternative than God, how did He do it? How did He construct the cells, the organs, and all the intricate details all at once before it began decomposition, something that begins almost immediately? Think about it, dear friends. This is no small thing. How could God do it? Psalm 33 and verse 6 tells us, "By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, and all the hosts of them by the breath of His mouth." Yes, by the word of the Lord and the breath of His mouth. One could argue that this is poetic and not to be taken literally, but the idea that it was by God's command that the universe and life on this planet came to be is something that is found throughout the Bible. Notice that this is confirmed in the very first chapter of Genesis. I won't read it all, but let's begin with verse 24. "Then God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing and beasts of the earth, each according to its kind, and it was so. Then God said, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. So God created man in His own image, in the image of God He created him, male and female, He created them." This account is severely abbreviated and leaves much out, but another passage confirms that it was the voice of God by which creation took place. Breaking into a thought in Psalm 148, we read, "Praise Him, you heavens of heavens, and you waters above the heavens. Let them praise the name of the Lord, for He commanded, and they were created." And then there's Hebrews, the first chapter, verses 2 and 3. "God has in these last days spoken to us by His Son, whom He has appointed heir of all things, through whom also He made the worlds, who being the brightness of His glory and the express image of His person, and upholding all things by the word of His power." But what exactly does this mean? How could He do it by commanding? It's one thing to believe, quite another thing to prove something. And this is why Evolution and Creation, What Both Sides Miss, is a resource that you need. So order your free copy today. And when I come back, I'll explore one possibility of how, that is, the process by which God may have created life by the word of his mouth. Welcome back. On this Tomorrow's World program, I'm discussing the origins of life, briefly surveying what scientists and philosophers tell us about the complexity of life and how it simply could not come about by blind chance, Richard Dawkins notwithstanding. But in this last portion of our program, I want to explore one possibility of the process by which God could bring about life on this planet. As we saw in the previous segment, God spoke and it was done. And by the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, and all the hosts of them by the breath of his mouth. And he upholds all things by the word of his power. But exactly how did God do it? Did kidneys and lungs, spleens and hearts magically appear without God consciously designing them? We have a technology that may at least help us imagine what this may have been like. While it has been in the background for several years, it's only in recent times that we, the public, have become aware of the power of artificial intelligence. And while this is a terribly weak analogy, it may help us begin to have a sense of what it was like for God to create life. Today's AI platforms seem very powerful and creative. Ask an AI program for a picture of diving cats, and it will generate one on your computer screen. You see different species of cats doing somersaults into the water. The cats are, of course, not real. But computer programmers can describe new applications, and AI writes the code for them. Students use AI to write term papers. They type in guidelines regarding the subject, the style to be written in, the word count, etc., and AI generates the thesis, not always accurately, and sometimes not without bias. Yet these AI platforms cannot truly create anything on their own. Instead, they have been trained using vast collections of mankind's knowledge, art, literature, scientific publications, and much more. AI is doing the work, but the AI is powered by the sum of human knowledge and creativity. Yet the mind of God is far greater than all of mankind's combined knowledge. Let me remind you of the Bill Bryson quote given earlier in this program. You could call together all the brainiest people who are alive now or have ever lived and endow them with the complete sum of human knowledge, and they could not between them make a single living cell, never mind a replicant Benedict Cumberbatch. In our analogy, as imperfect as it is, the mind of God is a reservoir of knowledge far greater than man can amass. God could have thought through, planned, and designed every detail of life, from the intricacies of cellular structures to the complexities of life's chemical processes. He had to design, as it were, write the code of life, DNA. With all that planned out, he could then simply speak the instructions, and instead of an image on a computer screen appearing, real life forms appeared at his command, according to the very designs he had planned. The point is that while AI may be a terribly flawed analogy, it can help us to see how every detail of life could be planned out in the mind of God prior to speaking the word. And when he did speak, the elements of the universe that he had created obeyed his instructions. God's mind and power are vastly superior to ours. Life did not happen by chance. It's far too complicated for that, and scientists know it. Only the mind of God, along with his endless power, could create life. One of my favorite quotes comes from Michael Behe in the context of modern discoveries revealing the incredible complexity of cellular life. The result of these cumulative efforts to investigate the cell, to investigate life at the molecular level, is a loud, clear, piercing cry of design. The result is so unambiguous and so significant that it must be ranked as one of the greatest achievements in the history of science. This triumph of science should evoke cries of Eureka from 10,000 throats, should occasion much hand-slapping and high-fiving, and perhaps even be an excuse to take a day off. But no bottles have been uncorked, no hands slapped. Instead, a curious and bare silence surrounds the stark complexity of the cell. When the subject comes up in public, feet start to shuffle and breathing gets a bit labored. In private, people are a bit more relaxed. Many explicitly admit the obvious, but then stare at the ground, shake their heads, and let it go at that. Why does the scientific community not greedily embrace a startling discovery? Why is the observation of design handled with intellectual gloves? The dilemma is that while one side of the elephant is labeled intelligent design, the other side might be labeled God. Thank you for watching. And be sure to come back next week when Stuart Wachovich, Michael Haykoop, and I will be right here ready to share with you the incredible wonders of God, the teachings of Jesus Christ and His coming kingdom, and end-time Bible prophecy. See you next time. I hope you profited from this video. If you found it helpful and want to learn more, be sure to get your free booklet titled Evolution and Creation, What Both Sides Missed, by clicking the link in the description or go to twtv.org/evolution. We here at Tomorrow's World want to help you understand our world through the pages of the Bible. So be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the bell so you don't miss another video. Thanks for watching. See you next time.